So I haven't heard the bell yet, but it's 11. So let's start. Thank you all for coming back, although the weather is good, and I'm glad you're here. If you feel that you haven't heard enough about entropy, here is one more. But this time, there's going to be examples and more details that you can take home and look at it and say, hey, this is how it's done, and this is how it can use it and do it. All right. So we have entropy estimation by example by David Conwell. He's a lead engineer with Booz Allen Hamilton, and he will, as I said, tell us the fundamentals of entropy estimation, and then the famous 800-90, and also the NIST tool that is there. We've heard a couple of folks mention that NIST tool. If you haven't had a chance to look at the NIST tool, I guess he'll tell us more about the NIST tool. All right, so take it away, David.
Okay, good morning. Let's get this right first. Okay, so this is a list of what I'm going to be talking about today. This is an introductory level talk. It's not for experts in entropy by any means. And I hope to provide some basic facts about entropy estimation. So the entropy problem is a serious problem for everyone, for vendors, labs, NIST, NIAP, and others. Entropy is used to seed DRBGs, which are used to generate keys. And we need to have confidence that keys are generated with the claimed amount of entropy. You definitely don't want to be the vendor in the news because your keys can be trivially recovered on a laptop. And you don't want to be the lab in the news because you tested the vendor in the news. So NIST and NIAP are probably protected from being in the news, so I think we should all go and work for them. Introduction to entropy. Okay, so what is it? There's Shannon entropy and min entropy, which I'll be mentioning in this talk. Given a discrete random variable with possible values x1 to xn and with probabilities p1 to pn, the entropy of X, the Shannon entropy of X, is defined here. And the min entropy is defined as the min of minus log pi. And you can rewrite that as minus log of max of pi. Notice that minus log is a decreasing function, and that the min entropy is always less than or equal to the Shannon entropy. Now, when it comes to calculating logs to base 2, it's fairly straightforward. All you need to do is use natural logs, which you can find on your calculator, and then you divide the result by natural log of 2, and you'll get the answer in bits. So what about unbiasing? An entropy source may produce a biased stream, and so we're interested in producing an unbiased stream if possible. And there are various techniques to do this. The first idea was by von Neumann in 1951. And then Bloom in 86 came up with some ideas to do with a finite Markov chain. And then Perez in 1992 kind of came up with a new method based upon von Neumann's method. And then more recently, there's been some further work to do with finite Markov chains. And I've just provided a reference there. I'm not going to go into any of that. But I will be giving you an example on von Neumann and Perez unbiasing. So the von Neumann scheme is a very simple scheme to produce a shorter unbiased stream from a biased one. It assumes that the random bits produced are independent of each other. And so we presume that 0 is produced with probability p, and 1 with probability 1 minus p, or q. So when we look at die bits, These are the probabilities of each possible die bit. And you notice that 0, 1, and 1, 0 have the same probability, even though the stream itself might be biased. So if you consider the following biased input string, whenever you see a 0, 0, or a 1, 1, you drop those bits. And whenever you see 0, 1, you output a 0. And whenever you see a 1, 0, you output a 1. So then you would produce the example unbiased output stream. So that's a fairly straightforward method of unbiasing your stream. But there is a fundamental assumption that the bits are produced independently. Now, in the Perez unbiasing scheme, he used sort of the von Neumann method, and he tries to, well, he does, make use of the bits that are dropped, the 0, 0, and 1, 1 bits. And this is sort of like a recursive method. And so in any unbiasing method, we're limited by the actual entropy of the original stream. We can't get more bits than defined by that entropy. But the Perez method has been shown to be optimally efficient in terms of the number of bits that you can obtain from it. So here's an example using the Perez unbiasing scheme. So the top line is the input bits, which I've divided into die bits. And so initially we go through the von Neumann method. We identify 0, 1, and we output a 0. We identify 1, 0, and we output a 1. And we get an extracted bit stream from that. Now we look at the discarded bits, and whenever we have a 0, 0, we output a 0. And whenever we have a 1, 1, we output a 1. Now from that discarded bit stream, we then apply the von Neumann method to that once again. So to the discarded bit stream, 0, 1 becomes a 0, and the next one is 0, 1 becomes a 0. So you get two extra bits coming out. You also look at the XOR of the bits from the input bit stream, and you're able to apply the von Neumann method to that as well, and you get a couple of extra bits. So putting all that together, you get an extracted unbiased or less biased stream, which is given there. Once again, this assumes that the input bits are independent. So as mentioned earlier, Zhu and Brooke reviewed the previous ideas, and they created three new algorithms. And if you want to find out more about that, I would recommend you read their paper. But it is possible to do even better than the Perez scheme. And once again, they have some optimal information efficiency proofs in their paper. So let's take a look at conditioning. Conditioning takes the raw entropy as input to a function and using the output of function as a conditioned source of entropy. The basic properties of conditioning are that it smooths out the roughness in the raw entropy source, but it can't really increase the entropy. Examples are hash functions and linear feedback shift registers. So I'm going to take a look at those two examples. So what can we say about a hash function and having an entropy input to the hash function? So a hash function is really a random function. And what can we say about the relationship between the input and the output? Well, for example, if we look at SHA-256, if the input entropy is less than 256 bits, you can't gain any more entropy. So the output entropy must be less than 256 bits. And clearly, the maximum amount of entropy that you can get is 256 bits. But can we say more than this? In general, I think it's an open research problem. But let's do a little bit more analysis of this particular example. Let's suppose the input stream has got k bits of entropy. then what you can do is you can imagine 2 to the k possible input streams going into SHA-256. And then what you get output from that is 2 to the k 256 bit long vectors. Now, if you look at that entire list, when k is very small, for example, suppose k is significantly less than 128, you don't expect to see any collisions in that list. But as k approaches 128, by the birthday problem, you expect to see maybe, say, about one collision. And then as k increases to heading above 128, you're going to get more and more collisions. And certainly as k gets up to 256, there'll be a lot of collisions. So the entropy of the output, given a k-bit input stream, entropy input stream, really depends upon the distribution of the collisions on the output. And as I said, I think that's still an open research problem. But it looks as though if k is pretty close to 256 bit, you might lose about one bit of information. What about linear feedback shift registers? So in this example, let's consider a 32-bit LFSR. You have a non-zero initial fill, and you have a primitive polynomial which steps out the LFSR. Primitive means that it's irreducible, it means it cannot be factored, and has a maximum cycle length. I've given here an example of what the polynomial looks like. I've no idea if that's irreducible or primitive. I didn't really check. But let's assume it is, and let's assume it has a maximum cycle length of 2 to the 32 minus 1. So suppose an initial fill has 32 bits of entropy taken from a raw entropy source, and we put that into the LFSR, and we step it out a million steps. And then we read off 256 successive bits as the key. How much entropy do those 256 bits have? Well, the answer is 32, because the first 32 bits of those 256 bits can be used to generate the remaining 256 bits by just using the polynomial. Now, if the number of steps is itself random, then you've introduced further entropy, and so you could increase the entropy if the number of steps was random. But in any case, no matter what 256 bits you extract, you can always generate it from the first 32 bits. So that's not a very good idea. So next, let's consider two LFSRs which are XORed together. So the first one is P1 of X, and the second one is P2 of X. So the question is, what polynomial annihilates the output stream of the XOR of these two LFSRs? And the answer is, it's the least common multiple of P1 and P2, viewed as polynomials. Now, if P1 equals P2, then Q of X is simply P1. So if you XOR two LFSRs that have the same polynomial, you haven't improved things at all. So you really want P1 and P2 to be both primitive and different in order to get any sort of extra information. So suppose each initial fill has got 32 bits of entropy, and we step it out a million steps, and we read off 256 successive bits. How much entropy do these 256 bits have, assuming a 32-bit LFSR? And the answer is close to 64 in this case. So you can see that in order to get close to 256 bits of entropy using this kind of conditioning, you'd need about 8 LFSRs. Okay. So now what I'd like to do is to take a look at the entropy estimation problem and provide some basic facts about entropy estimation. So we assume that we've got an entropy source with discrete random variable with possible values x1 to xn and with probabilities p1 to pn. And we want to estimate the entropy and min entropy from a data sample, which is s1 to st. So we, first of all, what we would normally do is we would form estimators, p1, p2 to pn, which are just the frequency counts divided by t, looking at the stream s. And these are also known as the maximum likelihood estimators or plug-in estimators. So then you would think, okay, I would use those plug-in estimators and plug them into the entropy formula, and that would be my estimate for entropy. And similarly for min entropy, I would plug them into the min entropy formula and I'd get an estimator for min entropy. So here I've provided just a simple example. If we assume that P1, and if the output bits are just 0 and 1, we have a probability P1 and probability P of 0.25 and a probability P2 of 0.75. Then H of X, which is the Shannon entropy, would be 0.81, and the min entropy would be 0.4. And I just give a simple data sample and provide, what the frequency counts divided by T would look like, and what the estimators would look like for entropy and min entropy. Now, what are good properties of estimators? Now, estimator is also known as a statistic, and a statistic is any function of the data. You would really like the statistic to be unbiased. So what does that mean? From statistics, it means that the expected value of the statistic S hat of X equals the true value, which is S of X. Now, in the case of entropy, this would be the expected value of H hat of X, where we've used our plug-in estimators. You'd like that to be the true value of the entropy. And another way of viewing the expected value is that it's the average value, if you like, having repeated the experiment over and over again. I mean, you could imagine generating, say, a million streams that are T long, and you calculate a million values of H hat, and then you take their average. You would expect that as you continue to do that and you take their average, that you're going to converge gradually onto the true value of the entropy. Now, so the question is H hat of X using the plug-in estimators biased or unbiased? And the answer is it is biased. It is not an unbiased estimator. So it doesn't have that good property. So the expected value of the plug-in estimator is less than or equal to the true value. So it underestimates the true entropy value. And in fact, Miller and Maddow showed that the following entropy estimator is a better estimator of entropy than the one where you just plug in the values. So this is given by the H hat, which is the plug-in one, plus n minus 1 over 2t. And in fact, there is no unbiased estimator of entropy exist for the discrete case. And I give a reference there that you can look up to see that. So that's sort of like a counterintuitive result. You might not have expected to see that. What can we say about min entropy? Is the min entropy estimator unbiased? And I haven't been able to find an answer to that. I had to go at trying to prove it myself to see whether it underestimates or overestimates, and I wasn't able to come up with a proof. So if anyone has a proof one way or the other, or a result, I'd be interested. The min entropy test? Underestimator. Thank you. That's interesting. I'd be interested to get a reference for that. Yeah, okay. Okay. Good. other areas of research, I reference a paper here, which was given this year by Kelsey, McKay, and Turan. Kelsey is from NIST, which is called Predictive Models for Min Entropy Estimation. I'll leave this up here just for a couple of minutes or a couple of seconds so that you can read the abstract. But they look at a predictive model of min entropy, which is where you use all of the previous amount, previous observations to try and predict the next one. So that's a good reference to go to see what the current state of research is about min entropy estimation. What about the NIST entropy tool? I'm not going to go into all of the details of the statistical tests that it performs. I'm just going to list them. But basically, it estimates the min entropy of a data stream. It tests for whether the data stream is IID and then performs an entropy estimation. And otherwise, if the data is non-IID, it performs a non-IID min entropy estimation. The NIST entropy tool can be found on GitHub. I think I've got a link to that at the end of the talk. Hopefully I put that in there. And these are the parameters. It's a Python tool. So first of all, you'd run the IID main.py. You input the data file name, the number of bits per symbol, and the number of shuffles. And then it performs a series of tests to see if the stream is IID and calculates the min entropy and outputs that as a result. And then it does some sanity checks to make sure that the result is sensible. This is, if it's non-IID, then you run the non-IID script where you provide the data file and the number of bits per symbol. And this performs this series of tests and produces a min entropy estimate and also performs a sanity check. Now I have three examples. I was hoping to get raw entropy samples, but I wasn't able to, so this is conditioned entropy samples. And they're from three different sources, and I'd like to say that Booz Allen is not endorsing these three sources. I'm just quoting the results because I think they're interesting. The first one is from the NIST Random Beacon. The second one is from a quantum company called ID Quantique in Switzerland. And another one is from Quintessence Labs in Australia. ID Quantique has got a quantum random number generator called Quantis, and they provided me with a conditioned entropy source. And it's a quantum optical process based upon photons being randomly reflected or transmitted. And Quintessence Labs is also based upon quantum properties of light. So what about the first data sample? NIST outputs 512-bit samples from their NIST random beacon that anyone can get access to. So I asked them to concatenate these samples together to get a 1 million byte input stream to the NIST entropy tool. And this data was treated as 8-bit bytes. When I ran the NIST entropy tool, it was confirmed as IID and gave the following as the min entropy estimate, 7.8852 bits out of 8, which is pretty good, obviously. It would be nice to get the raw entropy value out of that, from that source. But the NIST random beacon source is currently the XOR of two commercially available entropy sources. In the future, what they're going to do is to create a quantum source. And obviously, you shouldn't use this publicly available data for your keys. What about ID Quantique? They provided me with a million byte sample, which I ran the NIST entropy tool on. Once again, the data was treated as 8-bit bytes, and the data was confirmed to be IID, and the min entropy estimate was 7.89 bits out of 8. And similarly, for Quintessence Labs, they provided me with the same sized input stream, treated as 8-bit bytes once again. The data was confirmed to be IID, and it had a very similar min entropy estimate as 7.89 bits. So that's just some data, example data samples that you probably won't normally come across. So I've got three sort of fairly radical ideas to improve the NIST entropy scheme. The first one is in SB890B, they recommend that you have a minimum of 1 million bytes of data, which is very small. It would be really nice if you could have gigabytes of output from these entropy sources, and you could send that perhaps into the cloud where some special processor analyzes that data really thoroughly and sends you back the results. And there shouldn't be a limit on the symbol size of the data either. So that's one recommendation. I think that all entropy sources should be available in the public domain and be non-proprietary, like cryptographic algorithm designs. You know, all of our cryptographic algorithms are publicly available, so why shouldn't entropy sources, which are fundamental to the security of the keys that we use in these algorithms, why shouldn't they be publicly available and analyzable? I think there should be an international competition to design and develop the best entropy source for commercial cryptographic applications like there was for AES and SHA-3. So those are just three of my ideas. That's pretty much the end of my talk. These are some of the references and some of the papers that I referenced during the course of the talk. And I'll take any easy questions.
So I'm confused about the Markov test as it's been republished. So I've been using the Markov test for a long time. I got the original C code of the Markov test from the guy who created the Markov test, and I've been using it for my purposes. And there are things I needed to do to use it correctly. One is, yes, big data sets. My basic rule is 100 mega samples, preferably 10 or more times that. So that algorithm will ding you for having a small sample set. So the reason you got 7.8 on a out of 8 on a on good data is because your data set wasn't big enough. You should be able to get up above 98.5% if you do more. But here's where I'm confused. That test, you just run it and it gives you a number. What you want to do with the Markov test is change the Markov length and the group size, usually the same, one's bigger than the other by one step, and sweep it from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then you get to 7 and 8 and it stops running because it's too much compute load and it's too data hungry. But there will be artifacts, and if you have bad data, there may be artifacts in that which will be more better picked up by setting the group length such that it captures all the autocorrelation in the data. If it's too short, it won't. But this, the code we've got that I just downloaded from the GitHub, Tim Hall's code, there's no configuration. Where's it gone? There's S and G and the symbol size, and right, those configurations have gone, so I don't even know that I'm doing the right test. What parameters are in there, and what happened?
I mean, I haven't analyzed the code from the NIST entropy tool, the Python tool. I mean, there is a... Are you talking about the Markov test for non-IID data? Okay. One thing I did notice is that it seems to output a value that's less than or equal to 6, because I think it's a 6-bit Markov test. I think so, yeah. I've never seen it.
That's not great. You want to sweep it.
I mean, as it was in the last
but this was these results that I presented here were for IID data. IID data doesn't run the Markov test.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a couple things related to the conditioning. One thing that I've run into in looking at some designs is a notion that people describe as compression or accumulation or various terms, and that can be accomplished in several ways, or you know, lots of ways, I'm sure. But two common things I just wanted to understand, you know, your get your views on. One common thing that we have seen is a form of, like a subsampling kind of form of that, where you're essentially throwing away bits, and it's reducing correlation. But, you know, I think some people would see that as a form of compression, as the way they've described it. And another form of that is where the conditioning element may be, for example, even in the 890 series, you're feeding it into some approved algorithm from their perspective, so they know its characteristics. And it may be then that the number of entropy going in, the rate of input versus the rate of output is, let's say, 2 to 1 or more. And so in that sense, I think there's kind of the concept of accumulating or increasing the density per bit, if you will. And I wonder, can you comment on those things?
You know, so you're right in that if you have an input data source which is biased and you're feeding it into a conditioned stream, you know, conditioning function, and you start dropping those bits, then that's going to limit the output entropy that you could possibly obtain. You want to be able to use as in whatever conditioning function you've got, you want to be able to use as many of the or all of the input bits as possible, so that you don't lose entropy. If you start throwing bits away, you're going to lose entropy. You know, the problem with conditioning also is that you might have a k-bit input stream where k is, say, 128 bits going into SHA-256, but when you run it against the NIST entropy tool, it looks like, you know, you've got nearly eight bits out of eight coming out of that function, because the function is basically an unbiased function. So these other methods, you know, I guess I haven't really come across those.
Right.
You'd have to look at the design of them to see and try to analyze them to see what the impact on the entropy output is.
Yeah, I guess our interactions with NIST and some of our folks don't think it's actually valid to do that kind of statistical measurement after the conditioning, because it essentially hides that from you, that you really want to do the raw noise sources. And I noticed that it looked like it was actually done on, I mean, I'm not sure if that was right, but was it done on the conditioned sources?
The results that I tried, as I said, I tried to get hold of raw entropy samples, but I wasn't able to. So those results were on conditioned entropy output, which is probably why they're so good. Sure. Send me some raw entropy. Yeah, I'd be interested to take a look.
I have a comment maybe, or would like to comment something from the quantum information theory side, where the tendency recently has been actually to move away, or the proposal is to move away from those statistical tests once entropy has been generated. Problem being that if I give you a 1 million bit string only of once, every test would fail, telling me this is not a random bit string, although the production process, generation process, could have been a completely valid random process with this random outcome being all of one. And instead of using those tests, limiting the amount of entropy based on the generation process, why those quantum random number generators are actually an excellent choice, because one takes in some quantum physics laws at some physics or implementation imperfections and comes out with a precise value for what is the amount of entropy which this source produces, where one valid outcome could be a 1 million bit string of ones, and you don't throw this away by this reducing the entropy. My question is actually related to this, the entropy or your min entropy, which has this little infinity symbol below. And so I assume this means that one assumption is that the string of this is an infinite number of random bits, so that the n goes to infinity.
No, it's the parameter in the of any equation, and it turns into negative log 2 of the most probable sample.
Because I usually use this, the Smoothman entropy, where you compare, calculate the probability for a certain sample size.
The infinity sign that I used there was just the natural way in which I've seen it, min entropy being represented in papers and in the literature.
Yeah, that's it.
But it does not take into account the sample size, no?
Rene entropy has a parameter, and it can be like Rene H sub 1 is Shannon entropy.
So my question is,
shouldn't
the proper measure of entropy take into account the sample size and represent this by, for example, using the Smoothman entropy, which does this, and then compare this to the probability?
Right, which is why you need to analyze the estimators. And that was one of the things that I was doing, was to do some basic analysis of the min entropy and the Shannon entropy estimators from a statistical point of view. But you're right, yeah, you definitely need to take the sample size into account.
No, it doesn't matter.
One more. I wondered, there's another element as we look at this in the FIPS program about looking at heuristics. So I think you presented a part of that case, and then there's the statistical part. I guess in practice, when you go through those kinds of arguments, there tend to be a series of assumptions, and in those assumptions, it can be one of those things where you have to ask yourself, and how good is this assumption? And how far do we go in order to prove this assumption to base the case on it? And I'm just wondering if you had any commentary, that's a broad question, but any commentary on the nature of just how far you're going. Each question you're asking raises new questions, and any thoughts on that topic?
I can only go by, some of the, the entropy documents that I've seen coming from vendors, and, we've got entropy documents that go to NIST. We've got entropy documents that go to NIAP on the common criteria side. And there are assumptions that go into those entropy documents, for example. Right now, I don't think the analysis is really at all very deep. It could be a lot deeper, but I think people are basically just learning about how to produce these documents and how to analyze their entropy sources. And a lot of the people who are doing this, don't necessarily have a deep mathematical background or statistical background, but they're doing the best that they can given, what NIST and NIAP expects them to provide.
Right, okay, thanks.
So I think we're being led down the wrong path a little bit. The mathematics around extractor theory is very well developed, and it has some absolutes. A hash might be an adequate extractor in a practical sense, but there is a mathematical proof that it is not. There are cases where it will not work. It has been shown that a universal hash function is, but SHA ain't that. What does work is max, CBC Mac works, HMAC works, and that's Evgeny Dodis's proof from a few years back, and that's what's reflected in the CBC part in SP100-90B. There are arithmetic extractors, which have been shown to be good, and none of them are LFSRs or anything like that, or XORing. There is no proof that those form good extractors, but there are good extractors which are simple, which have proofs that they're good, and we should be using those. The best conceptual idea of an entropy extractor is it's a distillation process. Think of alcohol. You produce weak alcoholic mixtures, and you put it through a process, and what comes out is less liquid, but it retains all the alcohol and throws away some of the other stuff. You take weak entropic data, it goes through a process which produces less data out, but it's more entropic per bit. The entropy rate goes up, but the total volume of data goes down. There should be less entropy coming out than's going in, but you're relying on this saturation, so you get full entropy out, and that's how you get to full entropy. And that's what you're looking for, an algorithm that puts less out than puts it in, and but improves the quality of the entropy per bit. And CBC Mac does that because it's a compression function and it's got the right cryptographic properties. The Galois field stuff and the BIW extractors do that. There's BOAS has a two-input extractor, and I haven't really dug into that one very much, but that sounds convenient because you need one less entropy source. These things exist, and we should be using them. Do look to the papers at Crypto on extractors. They might be difficult to read, but they've got a summary that says this algorithm works, here are the requirements. And then all you need to do on your mini entropy estimation is see what the input requirements of the extractor are. Do you meet them? Do you have some engineering margin? It's no longer difficult. You just take the min entropy, add some margin, say you're meeting the requirements. It's all you need to do. You don't need to understand deeply. You just need to know you're meeting the input requirements of your extractor and know that your extractor is good.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that. I think that's all.
I encourage everybody to take a look. Never use von Neumann whitening. There's a picture on my screen which explains why.